Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jesse Billington, and we are back to preview this weekend's Zandvoort Grand Prix, the Dutch Grand Prix. We're back to the Netherlands. And when I say we, I mean all two of us. I'm joined by none other than Mr. Timo Albus Daly. How are you?
Survived the summer break just about with this complete lack of anything motorsport-wise until a couple of weekends ago, when we got a little bit of NASCAR to tease us over, and then a little bit of IndyCar last weekend, which treated us very nicely, but we've got the genuine article back for Formula One now, and whilst not my favourite circuit in the world, I'm actually probably looking forward to it the most that I have since Zandvoort came back, and that's mainly down to the season that we've got.
Yeah, it's looking going to be an interesting one. I mean, we've had, yeah, like you said, we had a bit of motorsport across the summer break, including that fantastic, if you're Dylan, finish at NASCAR, where it seemed to be a case of, all I got to do is cross the line ahead of you, it doesn't matter if I've obliterated you into the wall. But that's for a NASCAR podcast. We'll save that for another time. We might as well jump into the small amount of news that's really come out over the summer break. There's a few bits and pieces.
It's both big pieces of news, but also small pieces of news at the same time. It's weird.
Yeah, we've got five things written down, and some of them are genuinely quite small indeed. But one of them...
But they feel big.
Yeah, important.
But they're not.
Chunky. Yeah. We don't know yet. You'll see what we mean when we get into it. The first thing is, of course, Alpine have found yet another team principal, and this one is Oliver Oakes. And to be honest, I'm surprised they just didn't make Flav TP, but there's probably strings floating around there that he's pulling.
I think this is one of those cases where he knows he doesn't want to go to all the Grand Prix, and if you're team principal, you probably have like that baked into your contract, and he's just essentially, maybe he is in everything but name, but he just kind of is happy to float around and do what he wants, really. Kind of classic for his story.
He's found sort of an ethereal position above team principal that he sort of enjoys a bit better. Regardless, Oliver Oakes, he is the second youngest team principal in Formula One history. Horner was still young when he took on the reins at Red Bull at 31. Oakes is currently 36, but it's a fresh face. And crucially, this is the rare occurrence of someone from Formula Two moving up to Formula One. Oakes was the team principal and a key shareholder in Hi-Tech, the feeder series team. He was also a key figure in the team's formation and would go on to take control of Dmitry Mazepin's holdings in the team when he relinquished them due to the Russo-Ukraine war, setting up a holding company that would cover the Mazepin shares. So there's some interesting dealings going on there, but Oakes himself was a racer. He won the 2005 World Karting Championship and was for a brief period of time, like pretty much everyone, part of the Red Bull Junior program. I think at the rate they're going, you and I are going to be in the Red Bull Junior podcasting program in due course. Interesting enough, he was actually in the Red Bull Junior Academy at the same time as Sebastian Vettel, Brendan Hartley, Jaime Alguersuari, and Sebastian Buemi. So some big names alongside him, so he can't have been that much of a slouch. He did Formula BMW, Formula Renault, Euro Cup, British F3 and GP3 with smatterings of success, but nothing truly stellar. So he sort of relinquished the reins of racing and picked up the reins of commandeering and teaming, and they've done all right with Hi-Tech. They've had a fairly good run of things in a variety of different series, and now takes the step up to join Alpine.
It does seem a bit of a like for like in terms of here's a step up, but to a team that seems appropriate for where you came from. It's not trying to be mean to Hi-Tech, but you're not Prema, you know, moving into a top team that way. It does feel like a natural place to go. But like we kind of alluded to before we kicked off the section, it's hard to know what to make of it just yet because Alpine have been churning through personnel of all kinds quite a bit lately. So if he can make it more than a year, then we can maybe start having that conversation a bit better. But considering the track record at the moment, I'm not really sure. And weirdly, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, but Briatore in an interview recently more or less said the right thing in that it doesn't really matter who they have in that second seat or who they've got in personnel to an extent, because until they've got a car that can actually do something, you can have the rest of it sorted, but if it doesn't translate to on-track results, then you can keep switching it up as much as you like. That's not necessarily going to be the issue. You need to get that car sorted. So if he can be the one to help them and help steer them in the right direction, basically, then we can talk about it. But until then, it's kind of going to be I hope he makes it more than a year.
We'll see. I mean, the current rate is about one a year weirdly swapping halfway through the year. So we'll see what he gets up to. Meanwhile, when it comes to team principal news, Jonathan Wheatley is leaving Red Bull to join Audi as their team principal at the end of this season. And this suggests that Audi's recent signing of Mattia Binotto is going to be more of a technical role. It's going to be putting him back to sort of where he really found his sort of proper footing at Ferrari as well, which is good. It's what he's suited to. Wheatley will be leaving Milton Keynes at the end of the year and do a year's gardening leave before joining Audi in 2026. Though when this was first announced, it rather blindsided Audi. This came out relatively early in the summer break, and the Sauber buyouts sort of really pushing Alpine in the 2024 Dolt of the Year competition said nothing about it. The press release came from Red Bull of, he's leaving us. And also, we'll mention at the bottom of it, we think he's going to Audi. Everyone else went, yeah, he's told us he's going to Audi. Audi, meanwhile, going, he's doing what? Sorry, we knew nothing of this. So we're going, what? How did you miss that? How did you miss the fact that you'd signed a team principal?
So did no one talk to someone else? What's the communication going on at Audi? They're like, oh, did you not mention that you'd hired a team principal? And how did you manage to do that without someone else realising?
Yeah, it's a very strange one. I mean, it also hints further at the fact that Red Bull is possibly falling apart. Mm. Early in the summer break, there was various different reports coming out from various different sort of media organizations and sort of journalists within the field suggesting that there was going to be a test at possibly Imola, I think it was going to be, with Daniel and Liam reportedly getting a test in the VCarb 01 to sort of benchmark who's against which. So it's a current, and then also current Red Bull chassis, though this would have been a filming day. It was all jumbled around. Yuki wasn't even given an invite, but Ayumu Iwasa is going to be given a shot in the AT03. So there's been a whole lot of stuff, and obviously the details from a private test are never going to be made public at all, but it just seemed like a bit of a chaotic thing. And then cobble that together with the fact that leaving the Belgian Grand Prix, Max and Daniel were seen in high spirits, and Daniel had told the media he'd still be in the sport for the rest of this season and next, but couldn't confirm which car. Perez was then later again reconfirmed as the Red Bull driver for the rest of the season, despite the ever-growing suspicion and rumour. And then a leak suggested that Liberty Media vetoed Red Bull dropping Checo in a bid to ensure strong ticket sales at the Mexican Grand Prix later this year. And it's all largely conjecture around one of the most debated seats in the field at the moment. But if there was something going on, there wouldn't be the rumour, I think, is the overarching thing. We don't entirely know what's going on because it is all rumour, it's speculation. But could the old Red
Bull? That's the thing, though. There's something afoot, but we just don't know what is afoot. And it just all comes at a time where it's really not ideal for Red Bull, because they've got, obviously, Newey's left, now Wheatley's left. That's two big hitters for them. And they have, like we've said, I think, after the Hungarian Grand Prix, there are several quite easy and straightforward solutions to what to do with the two teams and the driver lineup there to sort that all out and make it definitive and just keep it like that so that these sort of things don't happen. And you've had Ricardo coming out today and saying that he's reaffirming that his place at Red Bull as an organization, but not in terms of, again, of where maybe that would be. Then amongst all the rumors again of Lawson and what's going to happen with him. So like you say, it's just kind of reaffirming the small bits we kind of knew, but then not giving us anything new and just kind of restoking that fire, but without really adding anything on. It's kind of like, you've got a fire and you want to keep your head, here's a bit of newspaper. It works for a second, but it doesn't really add anything.
Yeah.
And you're all just left a bit scratching your head.
I mean, equally, is it signs that we're going back to the Red Bull of old, the one that chopped and changed drivers like Pete Davidson and girlfriends? Is that the direction that possibly it's heading back into of, you haven't impressed us in five races, get out? Sort of, is that what's coming? I don't know. And equally, the other question is, with Liberty Media vetoing it, do they really have that strong a hold over what the teams do? Or is that, again, just sort of internet bollocks that came out during the summer break because people were bored?
I would say probably that.
Possibly the latter.
As is always the case, as much as rumors are interesting to talk about for a minute, I'm just so happy to wait until we actually know for certain, because we could go round and round circles till the cows come home. And let's face it, Red Bull don't fully know what they're doing at this point, never mind anyone else. So until they do, we definitely won't.
There is someone who knows what they're doing, though, and that is McLaren, and they have extended their contract with Andrea Stella, the current sort of team principal. And it's a multi-year deal that's been signed by Andrea and the team, and it makes sense. He's got the team to a good place right now. There's still a few little issues to iron out here and there, but he's done well to motivate and restructure it and make it a functioning thing. And it's great to see. It's great to see that growth and development that we've seen over time, and it sort of followed on from the works that had been done to McLaren previously, bringing it through sort of the Sainz Norris days and sort of kept pushing it on to a really good place. And it's fantastic to see that that's been rewarded and appropriately understood by sort of keeping him.
Yeah, no, it's really, like I say, it makes sense. It's logical. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Keep going. And that's pretty much what Mercedes have done with Bono, because he's re-signed there and has been promoted to the head of race engineering at the team, which does poo-poo any notion of him following Lewis to Ferrari, which could be interesting, because we know what Ferrari race engineers have been like over the years, but also maybe Roscoe gets promoted and everyone wins. But for Mercedes, this is good news, because Bono is obviously a very big asset for them. And I find the promotion interesting as well, because it's not going to be a whoever replaces Lewis, you're going to have to then start from scratch and build that relationship up. It's more of an overarching role where you can maybe help find someone to replace you in that role for whomever it is and take it from there. And I kind of like how they've done this. And it's that promotion from within and that reward for quite a lot of years of hard work and dedication. So I like that.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I don't know who George's current I think George's current race engineer is a chap called Marcus Dudley, actually, off the top of my head. And yeah, I think obviously Bono's new role is going to be overseeing Marcus and whoever replaces Bono, almost certainly race engineering for Andrea Kimi Antonelli at this point. So yeah, it's going to be, that's his new role. He's good at race engineering. And I think crucially, as Mercedes looks to get back onto fighting form and certainly get things in the ground ahead of the new regulations, they're going, okay, who are the good people we need to make sure we've got in the right place doing the right thing? This is, again, this is sensible stuff from McLaren, or well, Mercedes even. It's the same way we've seen sensible
stuff.
This
is what I think
McLaren.
As well, regardless of if it's Antonelli in that seat or not next year, whoever they put in that second seat has got to be there for at least 2 years, in my opinion, because you want that stability and you don't just want that behind the scenes. As much as it should be fine if you've got someone in there for a year and then you swap them out, it just makes it that bit smoother, and you know it's just one less thing you don't have to worry about. And Mercedes have been very good at that since they came back into the sport in the first place. So whilst obviously we've seen that they've not been at the top of their game, it's always principally come across as just the car, and everything else has been, there has been issues, you've not really noticed them as much, which is great for them as an organization and great for us, because it means that as much as we try and poke holes in it, we can't get through those defenses and we can't yapper about it like we can with Red Bull, and we go, well, it's just the car. And it works for them in terms of reputation, sponsors, all the rest of it. And it's, again, just encouraging to see, I think.
Mercedes as a machine is still incredibly well-polished, professional, and incredibly sort of high-functioning. The only thing that let them down was sort of a bad car design going into the new regulations. Everything apart from that, they've not sort of dropped the ball with anything else when it came to driver management, pit stops, race strategies. That's always been competitive, and that's what sort of helped ease
and
them back
and
to the top
of this
move
kind of reinforces keeping that consistent and going, we're doing this now, you know what you're going to be doing. Then you've got a bit of time to help us bring in someone to replace you so that you can make sure that they know everything that they need to know. So you're plugging that gap immediately. And it's not just the meme of the guy with the gorilla tape and just hope this works, as we've seen other teams do in the past and go, strangely, that's not a great solution.
Yeah, it sort of falls back to what we said at the start of, it's sort of news, but not really news. It's just Mercedes being very sensible Mercedes. On the flip side to that, though, Mohamed Ben Sulayem, the president of the FIA, put out a statement, I think it was early this week, late last week, I think, that the statement went out on Instagram regarding drivers and team members that could be punished more harshly for criticising officials. And it's reportedly, by him, driven by a correlation between negative comments from drivers and team personnel leading to increased online hate towards officials. The World Motorsport Council approved a change to the definition of misconduct. Basically, don't say you think a certain stewarding call or organizer call was wrong. That's not very nice, and it hurts our feelings.
Indeed, I think it's the correct response to that, really, because it's, well, we all know what we're thinking, really, don't we? We don't really need to verbalize. We all know what we're thinking there. Yeah. It just smacks a bit of, really?
Yeah. Is this more of a reflection on Mohamed Ben Sulayem's leadership of the FIA and the sort of changes he's enlisted into Formula One?
Secondary school spat rather than professional international organization that should be able to handle itself.
Yeah,
that's
it feels,
what I'll say about it, and then just
feels a lot more childish than maybe the situation really is. We'll move on then
however,
to better news. Yes.
Yes, because F1 Academy is back this weekend, and it feels like it's been forever. And it kind of has been, because it was June that we had it last in Barcelona, I think. It's going to be the only feeder series accompanying Formula One this weekend, which is also kind of nice. And we've got a new driver this weekend as the wildcard entrant, which we didn't have in Spain, so I'm still not sure why that was, but I want to know. I'm glad we've got one here in Nina Geidman, I think is how we pronounce that. She's currently racing in British F4, so she's been up against Abby Pulling before. And this also comes on the back of the announcement that F1 Academy has teamed up with the Female Quotient, which is an experimental media and transformation advisory company that aims to advocate gender equality in the workplace. It's a pretty big signing from the hoo-ha they've made about it, which is nice to see. And there's going to be collaboration events between the two taking place at the rest of the F1 Academy rounds this season, and the FQ will also be branding the wildcard entry for Zandvoort this weekend. Unclear if that will also be the case moving forward, but just nice to see another, for lack of a better phrase, left field company coming in and supporting F1 Academy. And Susie was saying that they're always looking for new ways to try and grow this series and bringing it, kind of the attention of it to a wider audience. And I like that there's companies out there that are willing to take that chance, because again, I don't know about you, Mr. Billington, but I had no idea who these people were before they were announced today. So it's kind of, it's already working, even if it's just two guys.
Again, for me, it's a learning thing of sort of going, oh, that exists. And also, I think genuinely, it's a very interesting sort of corporation and company. I'm going through essentially a master's in journalism at the moment. So sort of looking at the way that things are portrayed in media and the way sort of you look at audiences is actually quite interesting. So I'm genuinely, it's worked. It's got one person, me, who's going to be going and Googling this and doing some reading on it later, because that's quite interesting. But yes,
it's like whenever you get a new team involved. I know this is only sponsoring a car for the team for this weekend, but whenever there's a new thing like this and it's kind of that big, you're like, oh, who is this company and why are they getting involved? It's kind of, if you didn't know who Tommy Hilfiger was before they sponsored Neri Amati, you're like, oh, okay, that sounds interesting. Why are they, who are they getting involved? Oh, it's this person, da 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 da. You know? So I like that.
Rich Energy.
No one knows who they are, including Rich Energy.
Yeah, William Story still does not quite know who he is. It still goes on, that company. I genuinely don't know how. But anyway, we won't fall down that pothole. We'll move instead towards our predictions, because, of course, we've got the Dutch Grand Prix coming up. I haven't even checked the weather for it yet. Actual weather. Let's have a quick look and see what it's going
gonna
to be.
Either be dry or it's going to be wet. That's my two cents on this.
I don't want to call you reductive.
It's going to be a mix.
Well,
but it probably won't snow.
No, unlikely to snow. Friday, gusty. Saturday, a couple of showers. Sunday, sunny and less humid. So,
right.
Could be some wet opening
Four
rounds.
4 points for me on weather predictions.
And then sunny. Yeah,
to my tally.
Just some useful information to feed to the listeners before we go completely bonkers.
Well, you
with
say this.
Our
you're
predictions. Before I go completely bonkers with my predictions,
me.
Yeah.
For the rest of the season, I don't know quite what you've been drinking, but we'll get there. Pole position is where we're starting off, and going off the back of two victories in the last three Grand Prix, I'm going to stick Lewis Hamilton on pole, which is a mad thing to say, and I don't think I'd be saying that at the start of the season. But then again, not as quite as bonkers as you.
Not quite as bonkers as me. We'll go to Ellie Mae next, who, despite actually being in my house at the moment, isn't on the podcast for a very strange set of circumstances.
Just for those listeners who are worried about her, she's there voluntarily.
She's there voluntarily. She's still alive. She's not here being held
captive.
Don't
say still alive. That doesn't sound very reassuring.
That's not great. She's doing well. I will send a picture of her with today's newspaper. She's predicted Lando Norris for pole position. Yeah, digging on purpose. So you need a hole the size of Ellie Mae. She's predicted Lando Norris for pole position. And I think that's a fair shot. It'd be funnier still if she predicted that he wouldn't be leading coming out of turn one. But we'll wait and see.
Well, that's just a given at this point, no?
Yeah, that's just a statistical sort of fact.
Certainty.
I, meanwhile, have gone for Pierre Gasly, pole position. I don't know. I think we're going to see something interesting. Like I said, we're possibly going to get a wet Saturday, and it's going to be one of those sort of qualifying sessions where someone goes out, banks a really quick lap before the rain comes in, and everyone goes, oh.
And you think it's going to be Pierre Gasly?
I'm hoping that a lot of the other
teams. I love the doubt in your voice already. You should have just said yes, and we could have moved on, but you're even doubting your own wild prediction.
It's a very wild prediction. That makes it enjoyable to see if it comes true. Meanwhile, when we get to the podium, Timo, we'll start with yours.
I think Charles Leclerc should win. I don't know if
I
he will or not, but it'd be nice. It'd be. They've been saying that the cars had similar issues to last year in terms of they brought an upgrade, didn't quite work out. We've seen that, and they've had to be a bit experimental with it since then. And I feel like now would be a great time for it to come back online for them and really work. And it would be quite fun to see him win here. And it would be kind of such a Charles Leclerc and Ferrari thing to do to win at this circuit where Max has been so dominant over the last few years, instead of another driver or another team, especially when we've seen Mercedes and McLaren be so strong lately. It'd be kind of very appropriate for Ferrari to do that. That being said, I'll put Verstappen in P2 and Piastri in P3, which I feel sorry for Lewis for doing this to him. But also, it's my prediction, so
do
we
what I want,
don't
mate.
really think much of this is going to happen anyway.
It's interesting, we've all gone for Oscar Piastri in different positions, but all of us predict he's on the podium. Ellie May has put him in second place with George Russell behind him and Max Verstappen ahead of him. I think that's, of the three podiums, the most sensible one, because my one is Oscar Piastri on the top of the podium, a win. I don't think that's out of the ordinary. I think that's beyond reasonable, especially given his current form, the way the McLaren's driving. I've also gone for George Russell in third place because, again, the Mercedes is going well. He's driving pretty well. We saw that in Spa, provided we don't get any
someone
more tyre
threw a rock at
cock-ups.
Your head.
And then, obviously, I was struck by divine
Lightning.
Inspiration and went Esteban Ocon P2.
You're not getting any points for that. Fastest lap.
No, well, Alpine have got pole. But then obviously they're Alpines. They fumble it so bad they accidentally invert the driver order at some point, and that's how Esteban Ocon ends up
You're
on the podium.
Assuming that Ocon manages to qualify in a decent position, they can actually revert it by accident.
I'm going for the same theory as Gasly. They both get sent out really, really early in Q3 on softs and just absolutely stick in a smacker of a lap, and then it immediately tips it down before anyone else gets out. They're like, boom,
it's
there we go.
It's quite the thing where your actual world prediction limit is not that wild in comparison to the rest of them.
My wild prediction is actually
you,
a banker to try and get
you've
points.
Mucked up the memo here.
Yeah, we'll move. We'll
We're
go
going to go
fastest
for
lap
fastest
first.
lap,
Yeah,
yes. I've gone for George Russell because that doesn't seem too unreasonable in the grand scheme of things. I think, regardless of the conditions on track, he might just be in that bit of no man's land and just go in 1 or 2 laps from the end, get a new set of tyres on, off we go.
Not too far outside of the conceivable. Daniel Ricciardo, in Ellie May's mind, is going to have a complete revelation compared to last year, where he had a very short time on the track, by
so
which I mean
get
he
to do
crashed
Grand
and
Prix,
broke his wrist. Yeah. So instead, he's going to set the fastest lap time this time round to sort of make amends for it, which I think is interesting.
Acceptable.
It could happen. I've gone for Lewis Hamilton, fastest lap. Again, I don't think it's outside of the realm of possibility. The Mercedes is getting pretty good, and he is Lewis Hamilton. Can't discount that. Then we get to the wild predictions. Timo, you've gone for Loinz.
Yeah, he deserves to finish in P10. So Logan Sargeant's going to finish in P10. I think it'd be nice if he got 1 or 2 points before the end of the season, just for his own sake. And also, it'd be funny if he gets points before stake.
Yeah, I certainly think he'll get points before stake. I think we'll have Loinz before Stoinz, to try and coin that as a phrase.
Please don't.
I don't think Stoinz is going to catch on, I'm afraid. Ellie May, meanwhile, has gone for...
What's wrong with you, Jesse? I've got Stoinz. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, I'm going to cream for that. Ellie May, meanwhile, has said no one will crash into the barriers the whole weekend. So I assume she's focusing just on F1. Which is a shame. It's a shame we've got F2 and F3 there this year, because last time they've
I'm also
always
just
been
thinking
absolutely brilliant.
Barriers is leads to a potential of a lot of crashing, but just somehow they all avoid the barriers.
Yeah, you just sort of clatter into
just
yourself
stop
or other
just
drivers. Yeah,
before
just
the
sort of
barriers start.
skittering
No.
towards the barrier, but don't hit the barrier. Or is it going to be like pool and snooker, where it doesn't count if you've already hit something else?
No. Regardless, they're just not allowed to hit any barriers
The
at any
barriers
point.
will remain completely untouched. I was going to say, this is annoying because
This
it
is what
might.
happens when she's not here to defend herself. We've got
Yeah.
to bulletproof it in for her.
Yeah. Yeah. It also means that we probably won't get to see the incredible crane cam, where basically they have those massive cranes out on
Well,
the
they
back
might.
section of the circuit. They
Like I
might
say, they
do.
don't have to crash into the barrier for that to happen.
Yeah, true. Anyway, my wild prediction is several drivers make three or more pit stops. And given I've just said it's going to be a dry race, I'm beginning to really question that now. But
So how much are people messing up strategy where that's the the circumstances.
I don't know. It ties back into my theory that Alpine are going to crumble under the pressure of
Yeah, but
having a
you're
driver
hoping
start
that
on
they actually
pole.
make. Yeah, but they still somehow get back on the podium means they've actually done a good strategy and they're somehow not one of the drivers to
They've only
do
got to
that.
do it with one driver. They've only got to get it right with one driver, and it could be Ocon.
Yeah.
It's not going to be either of their drivers
Not
because
gonna
they're
happen
Alpine,
anyway.
but yeah. Several drivers make three or more pit stops. It's an interesting circuit for the way that it grains and obliterates tires, so I think we're going to see some interesting results from it, which weirdly, in a very short podcast indeed, has brought us to the end of the podcast. In the meantime, if you want anything from any more of us, Timo, where can the people find you?
Well, as I was reminded while I was doing the Across the Pond IndyCar podcast earlier this week, we have back to back to back to back weekends of races now, and then a 2 week break before the season finale in Nashville, I think. So mainly over there, I think, because I'm just going to be very busy with everything IndyCar, and it's shaping up really rather nice indeed. 12 drivers, I think, are still mathematically in with a chance of winning the title, although those latter two need to probably win every single race and hope that Alex Palou doesn't get any points whatsoever. So probably not going to be them, but also you never know in IndyCar. So do come and listen to our podcast over there if you are interested in IndyCar. What about yourself?
If you want more from me, you can of course find me across social media. I'm at Jesse on Cars on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And you can always find me writing for Classic Car Weekly. Our latest issue is out at the moment. It's got a preview for this weekend's Silverstone Grand Prix in it. I'm driving an Ex Works MGB race and rally car, and it is absolutely fantastic. And there's all sorts of other good bits and pieces in there to boot. And of course, if you want more from the podcast, you can of course find us across the usual locations. And we ought to say a huge hello and welcome to our listeners in Greer, South Carolina, and specifically to anyone there who's from the Southern Growl Beer Company, if you wouldn't mind sending us a case or two of hop flower. That sounds pretty good. Or maybe the pure pills or pur pills. So anyway, Greer, South Carolina. We've got listeners over there. I think South Carolina, there's a lot of NASCAR teams based out Carolina way as well. So if any of you listen to that, feel free to invite us along to a race. It'd be fantastic. I know Timo and I would enjoy that greatly.
I'll take that bullet if I have to.
If it's a free trip to go and see the NASCAR. It's excellent racing. It's really good and close. There's always something
Yeah,
entertaining going into the finish.
I'll just stay away from a couple of drivers just in case. I don't want to get involved on coming over the line. I don't
Yeah,
want to get involved with that.
sometimes it gets a bit scrappy, to say the least. Anyway, before we say something that may infringe our ability to get free tickets to the NASCAR, thank you very much for listening. And of course, we'll be back after the Dutch Grand Prix with a full review of the Formula One action from the Dutch coast and Zandvoort. Thank you for listening.